Hi there, I'm Krish Saroy and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. Each week I show you how to live your purpose and discover your own sacred wild spirit. On the podcast we explore the nexus point where nature, consciousness, leadership and activism come together. I talk with thought leaders to get their insights and wisdom about our collective transformation. I also show you how to own your power, give your gifts and make your highest impact on this world. So with that, let's dive into this next episode. So hi everyone, welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. And this week I have a very special guest. I have Rebecca Card with us. Hi Rebecca, how are you?
I'm pretty well. Yeah, I'm being worked somewhat and I'm well.
Great. Now I actually met Rebecca about, I think we were discussing before we hit record, about 5 years ago when Rebecca facilitated a medicine walk ceremony at an institution in Brighton called the School of the Wild. And it was like almost a mini vision quest, as it were, but it had a very, very profound effect for both myself and my husband, David. When I was kind of thinking about guests to bring on here, Rebecca was right at the top of the list. So I'm really, really pleased to have you on, Rebecca. Mm. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, please, and kind of what your what your background is?
Gosh, thank you. I'm just feeling really touched by what you've just said there, Krish. I really appreciate you sharing that. My background, I did a lot of meditation. I still do meditate from time to time, but I spent a long time in India, going back and training as a yoga teacher. So in terms of spirituality, that was kind of my platform for quite a number of years when I was over your way in Sussex. And at a certain point in India, I realized that I wasn't able to spend time in nature alone as a woman. And it was too much. And I was realizing that nature really was my guru rather than these people who were, I'd go and sit in front of. And so I just needed to stop going to India because I needed to be in nature more than the ashrams, so it seemed. And so I came back and I began a journey in nature connection. And that took me into, energy-based work, some very deep, profound energy-based work. And then I began to work with the Eight Shields model, the Eight Shields Institute from the States, and I still organize and facilitate Eight Shields work. But it was always the more sort of subtle, more ceremonial aspect of being in nature that would call me. And so I heard about vision quests, and I did my first vision quest, I guess, about 7 or 8 years ago while I was still in Sussex, but it was down here on Dartmoor, and Dartmoor just captured my imagination and in many ways kind of became my muse. And I just began this relationship with Dartmoor and particular spots on Dartmoor. And following that quest, the winter that followed, I got a very, very clear sort of instruction that I was to leave Sussex, that I was done. Time to go, pack everything up, put everything into storage. And that was both exhilarating and absolutely terrifying at the same time. I was ready. It was very clear that I was done there and I couldn't really grow into what I was being called to grow into while still in Sussex. So I left and I kept coming down to Dartmoor and knew I was going to end up here, but I was moving around a lot. Anyway, that was the year that I first started to do programs with Animus Valley Institute, Bill Plotkins, the founder of that organization. And So 7 years on, I mean, I've been doing the wild mind training with Animus for about 2 years, the last 2 years, and I work with people using that map. It's a nature-based map of the psyche. And then, oh gosh, about 6 years ago, I did the wilderness rites of passage training with the School of Lost Borders in California. So that's how I was able to resource myself to support people with vision quests. So that's a big part of what how I work, as you experienced when you did the Medicine Walker. Yeah, they are very much smaller micro versions of those longer ceremonies. So I don't think there's anything else really to add, really. You know, I also support people with grief work, of which there is a lot, more and more. It's a growing kind of realization that that's a place that needs healing in all of us, ongoingly. You know, we need to be with our grief as well. So that's another aspect of my work.
Absolutely. And I imagine that, you know, I can almost imagine there are two reasons for why that's growing. You know, one being a sort of a growing consciousness where, you know, we, as we grow in consciousness, obviously the stuff in the shadow, which is where we tend to put grief, has to come out. But obviously there's an ongoing situation that we're all dealing with, you know, across the world in the UK, where in a certain kind of way, we're almost grieving a way of life because we've been in, you know, various states of lockdown for almost a year now. Obviously there's the ongoing pandemic, political unrest in lots of places, including the US, all that kind of stuff right now. So I can almost imagine that could be part of this. So I guess I'm curious, you know, pursuing a question we were talking about before we hit record, you know, with the ongoing situation, with the, you know, the restriction that people are feeling, all that, what for you is kind of the invitation of the current situation from an almost, you know, a wildness or from an ancient wisdom perspective?
Gosh, well, if we're talking, let's look at it from the political standpoint at the moment, I feel as if a lot of the reason why I do the work that I do is because I see world leaders who are not in a healthy relationship with their leadership, that our leaders are often coming from quite a dysfunctional, toxic place, and it breaks my heart. And there's the grief again, you know. And so it gives me an impetus to create spaces, create containers for people to find, for all of us to find our inner leader, you know, our inner sovereign, if you like. So I've just used that political piece because that's where it takes me. It's like these people are not in service to life, as far as I can tell, many of them. These people are not speaking in a way that makes sense to me or is from a place of a mature adult or an initiated adult. Therefore, I cannot be led by them. You know, they're all we've got, and yet maybe they're not all we've got, right? So what would it look like if these times are calling for us to find our inner sovereign, our inner adult, for us to move around the wheel? So I can refer to the wheel in a moment, but the wheel which could pertain to life stages, that we move through our adolescence and we move into adulthood, having passed through the descent to the underworld and met ourselves in really deep and profound ways, in ways that means that we can stand up for what we know matters in this world. And because we're deeply connected from having been with ourselves in that way, we feel deeply connected to the natural world. We know that we belong, that we are nature. And that, just that, I can say that and say that it sounds, it can sound really simple, but actually many people, including myself from time to time, know that that's not always that simple to feel it and experience it and know it and live it. So what would it look like to know that we are nature, that we're not separate from it, and that that in itself is part of the shifting perspective, the turning of the wheel, in order to arrive into the life stage that I feel these times are calling us to, where we find ourselves in a mature, initiated adult place, where we can be in leadership from that place. We're in service to life, we're in service to the earth and the earth community, because we don't see that we're separate from it.
Love that.
So that's a kind of, in a nutshell, and that's how I see it. It's like, well, what can you and I do with this moment where, you know, it's scary. It's scary to me what's going on in the world. And yet it's calling us to really step up.
Absolutely. Let's face it, very often we don't get the breakthrough without the breakdown, do we? Everything you're speaking to, I was nodding vigorously there, because everything you spoke to there speaks to the heart of what the inquiry in this podcast is all about, which is, you know, how, if our true nature is connected with nature in its largest sense and inner sovereignty and all that kind of stuff, you know, to kind of pick up the metaphor, we are the change we wish to see in the world, as it were, but only when, as you say, we are in that kind of initiated adult kind of place. So I just want to pick up on that phrase, because that may not have a lot of meaning to a lot of people who are listening. What do you mean specifically in this context by initiated,
as it were? So what do I mean by initiated? An initiated person will have turned towards the deeper and the darker places in themselves, turning towards that which we probably normally are, we're probably most of us terrified by, is the truth. And we have, so from a perspective of life stages, again, we kind of find who we are in childhood and early adolescence. And then in late adolescence, the introspection starts and we begin to do that. Who am I in relation to the rest of the world? And that's when we could make a choice and go into the underworld and make the hero, the heroine's journey, which is, you know, in all the mythological stories that we hear, is always really hard. It's always really tough, right?
Yeah.
But it's meant to be, and it's meant to be an ordeal. It's not like going on a retreat and having spas and, you know, right, having a nice massage and a nice sauna. It's not that. It's in order, in my experience, is that in order for me to really be initiated, there needs to be some kind of edge. I need to feel the edge of myself. I need to know myself in a way where I actually don't know myself as I have been. So there's a process of unraveling and undoing. And in some ways, that's the ego, you know, the ego. We're moving from ego-centric, ego-rooted experience of ourselves into a more soul-centric, soul-rooted experience of life. But that can only really happen by meeting ourselves in this quite uncomfortable place, which could be a four-day vision quest. It might not be. Sometimes initiations go on for years, you know. Sometimes people come on a vision quest or some kind of ceremony, either with me or with somebody else, and they think they're going to come out the other side and they're going to have like this treasure, this answer, this, it's all like going to be wrapped up nice and neatly. And it's like, it might be. I'm not predicting anything. I really, you know, it's all I can do to say to people, don't have that as an expectation, you know. So to come back to your, you know, what is initiation? It's like really being able to resource ourselves, because we've met ourselves in this really dark, uncomfortable way. We can come out of that and find ourselves more. Well, there's a shift that happens where we feel more soul-led, as I said a moment ago, and where we're more in service to life because we've somewhere in there, there's a something happens, this kind of metamorphosis where we go into the cocoon and then we come out eventually, however long that needs to take, and we come out, can have the image of the butterfly here if you like. But through that metamorphosis, something of a more mature, a matured version of ourselves comes out, and that has much more of a sense of what our ecological niche is in this life, which we can say, we can call life purpose if we like. I like to call it ecological niche because everything comes from nature. Everything is based on our belonging to the ecology of this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's kind of that sense of us and this kind of separation we have in the sense of from the natural world. It's almost like, you know, there's nature, then us. And that's probably, I think it was Alan Cohen said, you know, a lot of our issues in society come from our profound separation from nature. I think, you know, you can see that call to nature, if you like, a call to depth. That's the word that keeps on coming up for me as you're talking. But again, it's almost like a lot of people are sort of almost playing it. I love that kind of phenomenon that was kind of, I think it's been reported widely, but there was a film called The Last Shaman about, you know, all the people from Silicon Valley going down to Peru to do ayahuasca. And, you know, they'd be standing there, you know, exchanging their business cards in the middle of the Amazon and that kind of thing. And it's almost like this commoditization and like the easy way of doing it by, you know, throwing some entheogens down your throat kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, I've had the fortune to do a bit of Vision Quest in North America, but never in this country. So at some point I will be doing one of those with you. But just kind of just for people listening, you know, thinking about a ceremony, thinking about ritual, because I think, again, I think there's a sense of craving of ritual for some certainty because we don't have a lot of certainty right now. But let's kind of maybe pick up on kind of Vision Quest or kind of some of the other kind of rituals around this that kind of take us into that deeper place that you've been talking about. So, you know, what's kind of involved?
Well, kind of thing
for those people listening.
I support people in self-generated ceremony. So, which you probably got from the doing the medicine walk with me. I don't prescribe a formula. I don't give people a formula because in my experience it's more powerful, it will have more of an effect and impact on the individual if it's coming from them, from their deep imagination. You know, culturally, we're not encouraged to resource ourselves from our imagination. Yeah, our imagination is extraordinary. And so by entering into a ceremonial space, by that I mean, for me, creating intention. Like if we, and then we can do that by marking, we can mark that, we can create a container for ceremony by pouring water into a bowl or lighting a candle or crossing a threshold out in nature, you know, a place that feels like this is where my ceremony is going to start and I'm going to pause here, right? Or, you know, when it's a vision quest, there is a threshold that I will create. And then that will be the place that people will be passing through in order to go into their ceremony. And then when they come back, they will pass back through that threshold and be welcomed back to the middle world, what we could call the middle world, out of the ceremony. And I'd say that for me, the purpose of ceremony or ritual is for, if it's soul rooted, if it's rooted in soul, it has the, it creates the opportunity for a deeper landing or claiming. And by that, I mean an embodied experience of whatever it is that we're in ceremony for, right? So I wonder if I can get, I'll just give you a very simple example.
Please.
So, I mean, I do quite a lot of ceremony here on my own and mostly on my own, but also with other people. I recently got a very clear sense of creating almost like a spell with a piece of yarn that there's a long story to that, but anyway, I had this yarn and I was to create a ceremony that was almost like a weaving of the yarn, and I realized that the ceremony was me. I was weaving myself back into the intricate web of life in a more full and deep way. And let me tell you, I've been working with this, you know, we could call it the wound. I've been working with this wound for years. And yet there was something about the embodying, careful, slow process of weaving and speaking as I'm doing it. And so then I'm not, suddenly I'm not just doing it for me, I'm doing it from all of my female bloodline. I'm weaving this. I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's just a very simple thing, but it means something because I'm, there's an enactment happening. And through that enactment, something is being, something is landing in my being that feels very powerful and is still working me now. So that's like an example of a ceremony. And then, like you said before, you know, these things can be just very day to day, can't they? That we can do something very simple, like every morning, the first thing I do for my solo quiet time is I light a candle and I offer gratitude. That's a very, very simple thing. But in that process, I'm presencing myself in relation to the rest of the world. And there's a deepening connection that happens just through that very simple thing of offering thanks.
I love that. I think there's something, you know, I see it a lot in the business world of, you know, we often talk about like habits or, you know, morning routines and like the optimal morning routine, as it were. And, you know, even in like the most kind of, you know, cutting edge of psychology, like positive psychology, it's still kind of this notion of something for me about that word habit is it's almost like a secularization of something broader. Whereas, you know, as you say, kind of lighting a candle, offering gratitude, or even a gratitude practice, for me, the moment I put the word ritual or ceremony on that, it opens me up something wider than just my own beingness, as it were.
Lovely.
I really love that. So that being the case, let's kind of open this kind of notion of day-to-day ritual and ceremony up a little wider for, you know, for people who maybe aren't ready to go out for 4 days in the wild, as it were. What kind of, if people want to kind of start kind of experimenting or playing with the notion of the power of ritual in their day-to-day life, what are some of the entry points maybe that, you know, people can kind of think about or kind of get into?
Well, that one I've just shared there, that's a very simple, accessible one to me. It could be, if you have access to land or even just a tree in a city park or on a street, you know, what would it be to go and be with that tree? Just be with that tree. I mean, we could call that nature connection, or we can call that ceremony, but there's an intentionality to it. And we're inviting, like you said, something bigger than ourselves, a connection to something bigger than ourselves. And we're including ourselves in it. There's something about the word reciprocity that I really feel like I'm apprenticing to that word and what it means, really. So what would it be to invite reciprocity into our lives on a daily basis? You know, what would it be to, as we're passing even buildings, just, you know, can we hear the clacking of the jackdaws above our heads, you know, or the twittering of the house sparrows in the car park, you know? And what would it be to turn to them and just acknowledge that they're there? It's like, I see you. Maybe you don't even know what those birds are, but you're here. I see you. Thank you. Thank you for being in the world. Maybe there's some words that you want to offer by way of thanks, by way of praise. You know, what would it be if we offer our finest words to those ones who are just, they're just going about our business? But it's like, I think there has come a disconnect. There has come a, we're not in, we've forgotten. We have forgotten how to be in relationship with the rest of nature, or in conversation with the rest of nature. And by conversation, it might not be what you and I are doing right now.
No,
of course. Right. You know, there's going to be, like, the way that ash tree wants to communicate is probably going to be very different to the way that I want to communicate to another human or to a vole, or, you know. So I'm speaking about nature here, but that for me feels really at the core of how I want to be supporting people to work. So it doesn't have to be a magnificent, ginormous, amazing forest, or, you know, miles and miles of moorland or whatever. It could just be a tree. You know, it could just be a sparrow on your windowsill. But to enter into that relationship and that connection and that encounter as if that one's place in the world really matters, and as if in context to that, your place really matters as well, to just be to be present to each other. I see you.
That actually really, that really floored me. That notion of, well, I mean, for what we're talking about, you have to obviously be open to the notion that there can be a conversation that happens between things other than human beings, for a start. But that notion of, when you acknowledge that in reciprocity, to pick up on the word you use, that acknowledges that your place matters as well.
Exactly.
Love that. Wow. That's like really hit me. I love that. That's amazing. So I just want to let that sink for a while.
Do. Yeah, your place here matters. Yeah.
And I think at the heart of all of this, you know, I was talking with a friend the other day, but there is, she said that her experience of social media was just millions of people kind of trying to prove that they matter. I just love. And so here it is. It's like we're all kind of going, I matter, I matter, I matter.
Here I am. This is what I do. Here's my thing.
Which, of course, stood behind that. It's the question of, do I matter?
Yeah.
And in this case, the act of giving, in this case, giving generosity or acknowledgement of something in the more than human world, kind of acknowledges back that you and your place in this world matters. I'm going to be soaking that one in for a while. I love that. Thank you. I love that.
And so I just want to, just to sort of add to that, that, you know, we can do hours, months, years of therapy, can't we, to really know that, and we still may not really know it, and yet I'm just really interested in that feeling, that the impact of that in you in that moment, which, by the way, I experienced it myself. You know, when a guide mirrored that back to me, it blew me apart as well, just to be in the alongsideness of that with you. You know, that, you know, maybe that's really all it takes, is for us to just be present to each other and present to the rest of nature, to heal that wound of separation. That very simple, okay, I see you, and I'm going to let you in, and I'm going to let you see me, be seen and be met and feel that being seen and being met by the others in nature.
I think we call that intimacy, don't we?
We can call it intimacy, yeah. Let's call it intimacy.
What an amazing reframe. Thank you. That's really something. I want to kind of pick up a little bit more on some of the deeper work, you know, all your work is deep, but, you know, I want to particularly pick up on Vision Quest and like the structure of Vision Quest that you use. Because I know there are a lot of people who have on listening to this have probably heard those words, but don't necessarily know what it is as a construct or as an idea. So I just wonder if we can dig into that a little bit.
We can dig into that. Well, I guess to go back and honour the ancient traditions, who, you know, by many accounts, there have been people all over the world who have gone out beyond their recall, to quote Rilke, and who have left the village, left the familiar and the family, often, you know, somewhere in the adolescence, but not always, in order to kind of really go without and be without and empty themselves of all the daily familiar doing and tasks and objects as well. The things that we surround ourselves with and get involved with is to, like, what, you know, what is it to really strip ourselves of all the known stimulation and entertainment that we're so bombarded with and so familiar with and so addicted to, you know?
Absolutely.
And so there's, you know, so I just really want to honour those ancient traditions, some of whom are Indigenous people from the United States, but not all, you know, some are from other places on the planet. And that, you know, it's been developed by people from the West, and, you know, it's been handed down to me and many other people. And I consider it, you know, a real honor and a real privilege to be in this role of Vision Quest guide, where I really, for me, I'm alongside people as they leave their homes and they leave their villages and they leave their people. And sometimes they're leaving roles, and that's a big part. So what the reason that people may choose to do a ceremony such as a Vision Quest might be because they feel as if they need to change something in their life, or something is very clearly changing, like, you know, I'm in my 50s as a woman, and I'm entering into my menopause or womenopause, and something, you know, we're transitioning, and I want to mark that transition. My children have just left home, I'm no longer in the mother role, but I'm not quite crone yet. Or, you know, or I've been doing this work for years and I really love it. And, you know, in many ways it really works, but I just got this feeling that it's not what I'm meant to be doing, but I don't know what it is that I'm meant to be doing. You know, that's a very familiar reason to do a quest. And so I'll support people to prepare for that, because it's all about the preparation. How do we prepare for this underworld journey, this descent into, yeah, the underworld? And we're leaving the middle world. So there's quite a lot of preparation involved, and they'll pass through the threshold, as I mentioned earlier, and then they're out for 4 days and four nights. That's an average amount of time for a Vision Quest to take place, but it can be less. And the invitation is to fast. So we also empty ourselves of the stimulation of food. and I, you know, people will take water, so they'll just be drinking water. And there's something really profoundly difficult at times, profoundly connective. Anyway, in the space of those 4 days and those four nights, because we've gone through this preparation process, they'll have some sense. They will have a sense of what they're going out with, what it is they want to mark. And, you know, and I'll always ask people, and how will you make it true for you? Right? Because there's one thing going, okay, this is my intention. So it's ceremony. So we're going with intention. And then the rest, really, the rest is up to you. So it's like you're sharpening an arrow. And then by the time you fire that arrow, when you cross the threshold, the rest is up to mystery. You know, you have to leave the rest to mystery, because the how it's all going to turn out is none of your business, really. You just got to, you know, you enter into the ceremony. You enter into self-generated ceremony based on whatever your intentions are, in order to make it true for you, right? So then you're back to the enactment. What is it I need to enact and embody and turn towards or call in or whatever? And then often the last night people will have as a vigil, they'll stay up all night, maybe, maybe not, don't have to. Usually I'm sending people out without tents, but they take a tarp. So they've got shelter, but they're open to the elements. Plenty of water, plenty of warm clothes. Anyway, there's a whole like safety aspect, of course, that is dealt with. And then they're back after the 4 days and the four nights. And, you know, I get the privilege of seeing these beautiful kind of newborn faces coming back, you know, back to base camp. And the welcoming is really important, because often as a culture we've forgotten how to welcome each other. And so there's a real healing for me in that welcoming and making sure that they'll have somebody back home who is going to welcome them, right? And so another part of, you know, how I like to work is on the cultural healing level, where I will, as a prerequisite, I make sure that each person has at least two people anchoring them from their local community, so that they're building the ropes of connection and they're creating, you know, a culture where we're all included, you know, more of us, just not just that one person, but we're including our friends and the people that matter to us, you know, so that they can support us ongoingly, you know. And we're saying, hey, I'm doing this thing and I really value you and I really value you and I want to ask for your support with this ceremony. So, yeah.
But so there is, again, you matter in you reciprocity. Matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, the other part of that that comes up, and I think, again, it's very much a big word right now, is community and our community, because let's face it, when we're all locked down in our houses and we can maybe go for a walk with one other person outside our household, or, you know, I think in Wales, you can't even do that. That kind of sense of isolation, you know, that, so that brings up that sense of craving for community.
Yes.
In Roth. And I'm just kind of curious, because, I mean, I can't imagine anyone who's listening to this podcast is going to be the super analytical fact, you know, ever, you know, empirical kind of person, as it were. But, you know, just in case, you know, what kind of things have you seen shift or transform through people going through Vision Quest?
People's relationship with the wild. Yeah. Like, you know, people coming back and having had that intimate relationship, dialogue, you know, being in their place for 4 days, 4 nights with, you know, that's it, really. I mean, they can move around a bit, but that sense of I really belong to this. This is home. And I really know that now. And I didn't know that before. And that is, you know, that's quite, I would say that's quite a common one, but I am celebrating and, you know, hallelujah that that's a common thing that people experience and come back with, you know. It's like, what am I going to come back with as a gift to myself and to my people? If they come back with that, job's a good one, you know, because most of us in the culture that we're in do not know that, do not experience that. And that is a profound and important gift to the world.
I'm just minded, you know, going back to an earlier part of the conversation of what would it be like if our world leaders went on a vision quest?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Talk about the shift.
Oh.
It just seems like, you know, that schism. I mean, I've been talking a lot to people recently about, like, for me, the real issue in the world right now, forget like people and personalities, it seems to be on a systemic level, that schism of polarity, you know, of polarization and all that kind of stuff, which is just a, you know, there is the enactment of separation. You're not the same as me, therefore you're different, and therefore that's terrible kind of thing. And you know, what if going through Vision Quest meant that our leaders, and, you know, I'm not necessarily looking to the politicians, but ourselves as well, what if we can kind that's of it. Come back to that profound sense of connection with all of that's around us, and therefore connection with who we are. You know, there is nature and our true nature.
Yeah.
And we lead ourselves and we lead each other from that place. And what kind of world would that be?
Exactly that. There's something about, there's a poet that I absolutely love He's called William Stafford. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No, I don't know.
But he talks about a thread. There's a thread that you follow, he says. And he speaks about it like you don't ever let go of the thread. I kind of want to be able to share it with you now, but I don't know if I can find it. But those words are a guiding force in my work, because I've always had this experience of there being a very specific, unique thread that has guided me in my life. And that when I go back to memories of being a little girl, being a child, I can really feel and remember that thread really strongly. So that's a really helpful process to do with people, is like, what were the things that fascinated you? What were the things that you were drawn to? Because children are not filtered like us adults, right? We don't have the screens. So it's like a body-led, sensory-led experience from one thing to another, right? So like remembering that can be really helpful. And somehow in these processes, these ceremonies, quite often what happens is that people just enter into that. I can hear a wren singing. That's really lovely. Enter into that timeless quality that we might often have found ourselves in as children. And we remember that feeling, and we find ourselves doing the things that we would have been doing as children. And so it's like we've got the thread. We come back in touch with the thread. Oh, that thing. There's something here. So we might come out of the quest having a stronger sense of that unique way that we express ourselves. And that is the foundation or the root of our ecological niche. The vehicle with which we express that thread is another step, is another level or another process, right? So we don't need to go into, oh, I wonder therefore what it is I'm meant to be doing,
right? It's a being thing, right?
We just need to know what that thread is. Would you mind if I read this poem?
Please, I would love that.
I would probably say he is my favorite poet, which is a grand statement from somebody who loves poetry. So it's called The Way It Is, and that's the book, The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you cannot get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. But nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread.
I think I'm going to be ordering a copy of that book as soon as we get off.
Conscientious Objector, William Stafford. Beautiful. Yeah. There you go.
What a beautiful expression of it. Mm. And I love that notion of you can never truly get lost.
You can never get lost. Yeah. Oh, there's another poem coming to me now, but I won't.
For another time, maybe. Rebecca, I'm just kind of conscious of our time, so I want to kind of just before we wrap up, I'm just kind of would like to kind of connect you with the readers, with the audience, as it were. So if members of the audience would like to find you online or connect with you, where can they find you?
So I have a website. It's called naturewisdom.life. And email rebecca@naturewisdom.life. Yes.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure those are in the show notes as well. And I have to say, folks, if ever you get a chance to be down in Dartmoor to do work with Rebecca, having done some in Sussex, as I said right at the beginning, it was profound. And that was just a day. So I'm certainly going to be looking to do an experience with you. Please.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I do at the moment, I'm doing one-to-ones online. So if people wanted to do an hour session with me to try it out online, and then I've got one program planned online, I'm probably not going to be doing any more, for an in-bulk medicine walk. So there'll be a day in council and then a day for people to go out on the land on their own, and then another day in council for hearing the stories and having them reflected back. So that's an event that people don't need to come down to Dartmoor for.
Brilliant. What a great way of doing it, because of course then people can do it wherever they're at. And that means they connect with their own ecosystem, which is lovely. So that will obviously be around the 1st of February, so I'll make sure that the link there or thereabouts, I'll make sure the link to that specific event is in the show notes as well. So Rebecca, thank you so much. I knew this was going to be a great conversation, but I had no idea quite how profound it was going to be in a short space of time. So I just want to really deeply thank you for being with me today.
Blessings. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you for doing this work and spreading the good word of people and this important stuff that we're trying to get out in the world. Yeah, bless you.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, listening to the Sacred Wild podcast. I'm Chris Soroy, and that was our talk with Rebecca Card. We'll look forward to hearing you and speaking to you on the next podcast. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me on the Sacred Wild podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and got something meaningful out of it. And if you did, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Those reviews really help us out and they're what keep us here. Also, please make sure to hit subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and loved ones. And with that, many blessings, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now.